The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the McManaman and Wing Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic broadcast here with our host, Tom Wing. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Better than I deserve. How are you?
I cannot complain. You know, glad to be here. Now, I'm wearing my Philly stuff, and I know Tom is in the Formula One racing. Okay, it's kind of like go karts, except $3 million a car. I did a little research. Well, somebody had told me how much the Formula One, you know, automobiles cost, right? And man, but I bet it's incredible being there, right? You've never been there personally, but if you like it and you're watching it on TV. You know, you got to have them big speakers blasting. But I'll tell you who does and who is into the Phillies and into the Eagles and all, Sean.
Of course.
Okay, so Sean Fulmer, Schatt, Steinberg, and Klayman. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Always good after a Phillies win.
Absolutely.
Division.
Absolutely. Now, let me just say, having said that, you know, I went to the game last night. Okay, and my wife picked the tickets out. Okay, a month ago.
Were they good seats?
They were Hall of Fame box, right?
Oh, nice.
And so what's crazy about it is, and I was telling Tom on the way in, I mean, we played the Mets. We had four games. We split that series. Last night means nothing. But we make it down there, and it was good to get the W, good to get the first division win, you know, in 11 years.
Yeah.
Or since 2011.
Since 2011, yep.
Yeah, so yeah. What are your thoughts for the playoffs, Sean?
Hopefully they can get healthy, get hot. Oh, I'm sorry. Hopefully they can get healthy, get hot, and keep it rolling.
It's a marathon and a sprint. The thing about baseball is you can't go into a slump in the playoffs. And we have it. One of the issues that concerns me is, first of all, we need the home field advantage. Our team is so accustomed to our park, but you eventually got to go away.
And you can't have Sanchez start away. You have to have Sanchez start at home.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I never thought of that. I never, ever thought that. And I just thought about it the other day that your fourth and fifth pitchers, okay, as much as they're at the end of the rotation, they're pitching away.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, and he's obviously, what's his ERA, 5.5 on the road and 2 point something.
It's a crazy difference between home and away.
It's crazy. So we'll see what happens, man. I'm excited. It was cool. We have to, obviously, we need to, you know, we got to, you know, got to finish up strong, but also got to go on, you know, got to have some momentum. And then if you don't mind, Tom Wing, and we're going to talk some work. The only reason we're talking about this right now is we're aware that if one of these players gets hurt, it's a work comp injury. So we are kind of in your wheelhouse right now, just a little angle. What do you think of the Eagles, Sean?
I mean,
as you can see, I'm representing.
We're representing both, yeah.
Both, right.
They snuck it out on Sunday, everything besides Sirianni.
Sirianni. That's exactly what I was going to say. He kicks when he should be punting, and he goes for it when he should be kicking field goals.
It was wild. So many points left on the board. They could have done so much, made that game so much easier than it had to be.
Yeah, it's definitely, look, he's flipping a coin out there. It's not like our momentum's there or the situation calls for it. And then at the end of the game, it's bit us in the butt. You know, our defense looked incredible, thankfully. I thought we were getting crushed.
I mean, they stopped a team that scored 90-plus points the first 2 weeks, held them to, what, 12 points?
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you this. You know, I think that we're in a situation where – you know, it's the beginning of the season. A lot of teams are, you know, just fine. And evidently the Washington Redskins, their quarterback's throwing at 80% clip.
Yeah.
80%. I mean, so I hope he has a, you know, he's a rookie for crying out loud.
I think he set a rookie record last night for completion.
Good for him. So let's go around the horn. Dr. Bruce Grossinger is going to be in the house fairly soon. We got Matt in the house. What Matt's not only a great producer, but he brings the average height up of a panel. So yeah, we're all, so right now I can literally say I'm like 5'10", okay, which is, you know, I'm stretching a little bit, but he's got to be here all the time, Tom, just so.
We keep bringing him back just for that.
That's the only reason. I got it. Anyway, let's do this, Tom. If you would, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and McMenamin and Wing.
Sure. My name's Tom Wing. As you said, I'm one of the partners at McMenamin and Wing. We handle only workers' comp claims, and we are statewide. We got four offices pretty much all over.
Fantastic. And our guest is no stranger to the broadcast. He has been here before. Sean Fulmer, if you would. Sean is pinch hitting for Dana Klayman, okay? And so, you know, we're very, very fortunate to have Tom. In fact, Tom, I think, was on a previous show, or Sean was on a previous show, but Dr. Bruce Gossinger just walked in to the house. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you, Jill.
Sean, if you would, a little bit about yourself, the practice, and about Chad Steinberg and Klayman.
Thank you. Yeah, Sean Fulmer, attorney for 13 years, only do personal injury. Dull bites, trip and falls, slip and falls, car accidents, medical malpractice. We also have lawyers in our office do criminal work. We do Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Really try to accommodate everyone by Zoom and phone calls and any other electronic means to make sure we cover as much area as we can.
Okay, and having said that, I also bring Dr. Bruce Grossinger, who has been here since 9 o'clock but likes to make that big entrance.
Yeah, you know. Just it was nothing. It was just a small brain surgery, but I managed to get here.
Well, that's what it's all about.
Things happen.
Well, not only that, Doc. Tell them what happens when you know you get there. Sometimes you'll give me a call and say, "Hey, Joe."
It's exactly right. When I'm doing a complicated brain surgery, what I'll do is I'll get you to come in like Jackie Chan, yeah. And you'll open up that textbook and you'll show me the anatomy.
It says here. Now, I Google it, Doc. I Google it, right?
Google is one of the best surgeons. So you Google it, you go AI, and
I was just going to say AI.
I couldn't do any procedure without you, Joe.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll get you that cash later. Doc, if you would, a little bit about yourself and the practice.
Sure. It's Grossinger Neuropain Specialist. We have pain service, essentially medicine. Everything from concussions, obviously a big concussion week with two best Eagles concussed, concussion, EMGs, as well as spinal injections. We try to quarterback the team. That is, somebody gets hurt either in a car accident or work accident. I try to quarterback the team. I set the table. And just like Jalen Hurts, I try to distribute. I find physical therapy, chiropractics, MRIs, EMGs. From day one, we want to make sure we document and treat these people well, and we're right in Ridley Park near the airport, so we're kind of like the center of spokes of the wheel all throughout the Philadelphia area.
It's interesting because there's a lot going on, Doc, board-certified neurologist. I don't know if anybody read this, and it touches on a decent amount of things. Right now, the Philadelphia Eagles from the 70s, that was in the paper today. They estimate that 1/3 of the players back then have, what's it called, CTE? Or
chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, repetitive brain injuries. Unfortunately, I know a lot of them personally, and I'd say that number is probably low. It's probably greater than a third.
So it's interesting. It's not a bad way to kind of segue into a type of injury, okay? Let's talk about these situations. Let's talk about, for example, a third party work injury. Okay, where everybody here would be working together. So, I'll take you back to a job that I was on as a young iron worker at the Neshaminy Interplex. Okay, my buddy Dave, I'll never forget this as long as I live. I'm on one side of the building, he's on another, and a plank. And the building's already decked, we're on the lower floors, okay? And a plank, and we call it, you know, falls, you know, somehow falls off the top floor, hits him right in the head, okay? Now, he had his hard hat on, but he was messed up pretty bad as far as concussions go, okay? And I could see it. I was about 75 yards away, but there's nobody else on the floor. We're kind of doing decking down, you know, down below. And one thing that, you know, I just happened to be looking in this direction. Tom, okay, that happens. Okay, back then, and that was the 80s. Okay, but right, you know, so I imagine that there was probably little, you know, information on and or even support, you know, in regards to work injuries that were, you know, concussion oriented. But what you get that call, okay? I think they've tried to, you know, I mean, he spent a few days, but he was out for years after that, and I think he had some trouble, but talk about that process. He gets it. There's no blood. He didn't break his neck. He got hit with, you know, the plank that fell through the deck. And, you know, where do you go from there?
Sure. So, I mean, the emergency room's only going to do that initial workup. They're not going to do any of the specialized testing, no neuropsych evals or anything like that to try to figure out is there visual disturbance or anything like that. A lot of times when someone has a head injury at work, they have very little workup once it walks into my office. They've seen an occupational medicine doctor who's kind of an expert at nothing, and they've been to the emergency room who confirmed that they're not dying, and that's it. And so at that point, we have to make that referral to a specialist like a neurologist who can really dial in exactly what's wrong and how they can fix it, because there's all these different specialized therapies and treatments for people with head injuries. And, you know, you kind of hinted at it sort of back in the 80s. The research on concussions is really been evolving, especially in the last 10 years, on how they treat it, how they identify these injuries. I mean, we're catching head injuries now that you wouldn't have caught 15 years ago.
So interesting enough, here's where Sean comes in. It was another contractor from that I believe it was, I don't know, the roofing contract, whatever it was, but they were moving the planks and one of the guys tripped and it fell and hit our guy. Okay, at that point, that takes the situation into a whole nother area. Okay, what? So you get that situation, Tom, and we're going to get into the medical part of it, Doc, in a minute. But and you find out, okay, this was not one of our own people. In fact, I think maybe they had a crane, the roofing outfit, and it was an accident, of course. I mean, but they overloaded the load of plank, and it fell right out and fell. And it hit my buddy. That's a union job, so there's safety, you know, a lot is paramount. But this was an accident. Where does it go? Where does Sean come into the picture?
Sure. So what I hinted at, there's a number of things that we do when a case walks in the door, and one of those is to identify sort of the specialists or the doctors that you're going to need to build your claim. Another is your issue spotting for any other potential actors that may have been negligent in causing this injury. And so when you're talking about some outside or different contractor other than the employer, you're going to bring someone in like Sean to take a look at that claim and sue those negligent contractors, because in workers' comp, you can't sue your employer for damages like pain and suffering. You're stuck with what the Workers' Compensation Act provides. But Sean gets to go in the court of common pleas and recover all of those non-economic damages that I can't recover.
So sometimes these cases, so I don't know how long Dave held out before he had to go to a workers' compensation attorney. Imagine that it was a little while because he thought he could do it himself.
Oh, yeah. They always get strung along at least for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days before they go see a real doctor who's actually going to look at them and somebody actually looks at the claim.
And so, you know, this was – so Neshaminy Interplex is right up there. Way up the boulevard. But this was the first building, and it was out of all that complex. Where do you go, Sean? You know, you get this case 3 weeks later – maybe a month later, maybe longer, because Tom is just getting it after our guy got messed up, but and getting screwed over by the carrier. Where do you go? Because chances are, if I think back, or really any job, we're working eight for eight, man. You can't even, there's no holes left in that building. Where do you go? You get this thing a couple months later.
So, I mean, once Tom refers it over, we try to get as much information from the client as we can. Because obviously the client is going to have a lot of information being on site daily and be able to identify maybe who brought the crane in, the roofing company, shirts, logos on trucks, things like that.
How do you research it, though? Like when you get there, these contractors are coming and going. Okay, would you go to the general contractor or something like that? Okay.
So normally, I mean, for us, we try to do an approach where we identify everyone, right? We go general contractor, property owner, subcontractors, other contractors, because although someone may not be a target defendant or a target responsible party, the problem is that they may have key information that may tell us, hey, this is how the incident happened. Because Dave didn't see what happened, just hit Dave in the head. So these other parties, the other contractors, other employees may have information even though they had nothing to do with the plank actually falling.
Iron workers who were there definitely saw it. I mean, we, you know, we had guys on, you know, on the floor above. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, but he didn't go by a hospital by ambulance because it didn't look. And so we had his men, and our guys are typically there, you know, for till the end of the job. Doc, if you would, talk about, first of all, that type of scenario where somebody, right, you know, comes in, it's maybe a month, they've are probably getting thrown around, you know, a little bit by the panel doctor, because I'm sure Dave said went right to the company and said, "What do I do?" What's the first process, especially since you can't see these injuries, and how do you document them and prove them?
Well, the first hypothesis is false. So we do see the injury. So I haven't seen a panel yet anywhere where they have a neurologist on the panel.
I didn't mean that. I mean you don't see a you don't see blood.
But I'm glad you phrased it that way.
Okay.
Because some people may infer with that 90-day rule that I can't see him. So I'm glad you phrased it that way. And Dave is going to be told that you've got to see these four people. But the loophole is there's no neurologist. In 34 years since I've been doing it, I see them on day one. The key is for somebody, whoever, friends, relatives, attorneys, get them to my attention and treat them like family. All right. And in the old days of the 80s, it was different. Sit in a dark room and rest. That was the state of the art. Right now, they need CAT scans, MRIs. They need neurotransmitter replacements with dopamine, acetylcholine, stuff that we're doing in our office that you guys may or may not see. For there's a reason why when the Eagles get hurt, the Sixers get hurt, they try to direct them to NovaCare or even Penn. But guess what? They got me on speed dial. I'm talking the athletes themselves. So the fact of the matter is we've got to get them in, imaging studies. We've got to get them on neurotransmitter replacements. Early therapy is very important. Cognitive rehab, vestibular rehab. We examined them to see if their inner ears. Lane Johnson was injured yesterday. He had an inner ear injury. He was vomiting.
Yeah, so
it wasn't due to a brain injury. It was due to a vestibular injury. So that guy is on, right now he's on Medrol, he's on Meclizine. And he also, when somebody vomits, you have to worry about cerebral edema, cerebral hemorrhage, subdural hematoma. So what happened there? They took Lane Johnson to Tulane Medical Center. You won't hear this from the Eagles, by the way. But so what happened is they took him to Tulane Medical Center, got a clean CAT scan. The other one was Devontae Smith, who got hit, was knocked unconscious. That's one of the five no-go things in the NFL. You're knocked unconscious, you have amnesia, you have an impact seizure. That's no-go. You don't go back in. So in that scenario, he had a prolonged loss of consciousness. Both of those guys are in concussion protocol. But bringing it back to the Cobb case, they need to be seen, they need to be examined, they need immediate imaging studies, they need early impact tests, they need neurocognitive assessments, and a lot of times I'll interface, for instance, I'm the quarterback, so I might set up to Dr. Marita O'Leary, who's the best at vertigo, we all know her, she's wonderful, I'll send her there for vestibular ocular rehabilitation. I'll say they have neck and back problem. I'll send them either to a physical therapist or a chiropractor. And I'm setting the table so the earlier I get them, the better it is. And if this thing languishes, like let's say it languishes, there's another thing. Like I had a case yesterday. It was a workers' comp deposition where nothing really happened. They went to a chiropractor. They had a head injury. Nothing happened. It happens like that, especially in rural areas, which this is not one of those. I got in on them. We did a CAT scan. We found they had a chronic subdural hematoma. We sent them to somebody at Lackadaw who actually drained the subdural hematoma. What's the teaching point? There's no sunset clause for good medicine. When you're in the law, the insurance company tries to say there's a lapse in treatment. Oh, they missed it. They missed it due to COVID. That's not how we deal with things. Once I get my hands on them, they're going to get good care.
So how do you deal with that from a legal standpoint? In other words, because in a sense, you know, do they still push back when it's, you know, a head injury and where it's clearly not a fractured skull. But when you talk about, is there a different legal approach that you take? The doc's talking about a comprehensive workup. And I'm sure that's got to be part of it, especially when you have somebody who's the catastrophic injury could be something you don't even, could seem not catastrophic. But how do you approach a legal, your situation in workers' comp when it comes to a brain injury?
Sure. So we want to see everything that's documented, as much objective information as we can get our hands on. So the doctor mentioned things like ocular therapy, vision therapy. There is data that comes out of some of that. If someone has convergence insufficiency in their eyesight, that can be measured. That's objective. That's easily repeatable by any physician. And a lot of times these IME physicians, these independent quote unquote medical doctors that come in for the insurance company, they're going to do a very cursory exam. And a physical examination like you do for a back injury or a shoulder doesn't really work for a head injury. There's a lot more testing involved, as the doctor alluded to. But that's all they're going to do. And so they'll say, oh, well, their cranial nerves are intact and there's no fracture noted on x-ray at the emergency room. It's been 10 weeks. Go back to work. You're fully recovered. And so when you're trying to attack that opinion and show, okay, well, this guy has all of these deficits and here's what the testing shows and here's what the medical literature says and all of this lines up and, okay, it's up against the cranial nerves are normal. And so they're actually fairly easy cases to build as long as you get into them quickly and you can get that documentation. Not to mention, when they're going through these concussion protocols, you can also show objectively that they are improving. You can see that they're making gains in either it's focus or vision or all sorts of different things, where if you have a delay, they're still going to have deficits there, but it's a little harder to show those gains.
So having said that, how do our judges, workers' compensation judges, I don't say open to it, but are they knowledgeable about those things? And are they, I know that the insurance companies do everything they can to push back, but the workers' compensation judges, are they, I'm sure they're aware, but I mean, are they open to this type of evidence?
So workers' compensation judges in Pennsylvania are required to practice substantially over the last, I think it's 5 of the last 7 years within which they are appointed to be a workers' comp judge as a workers' compensation attorney. So they'll have a lot of actual practical experience within this system. On either side, there is a caveat there, in order to be a workers' comp judge. But the state has done a pretty good job at identifying decent judges who are reasonable and are open to new medical research. Now, there are a few judges out there that I think still look at concussions, sit in a dark room and just mind your own business for a week and go back to work. But I think for the most part, as long as the medical experts are up to date on the medical literature and they're going through it and explaining it to these judges, you have to understand these judges are lawyers. They're not doctors.
Right.
So it has to be broken down step by step to say, okay, well, this is what's objective. We can reproduce this in a lab, essentially. Some other doctor can repeat all the tests I did on this patient, and they're going to get the same results. And that's very persuasive, really, to any judge, even someone who might be skeptical.
Sean, how do you when it's a head injury, okay, and you can see there's different varying degrees, okay? But if you have, how do you approach that as a case, okay? How do you measure what are the damages, okay, and long term, okay? How do you I don't want to say value it, but in a sense, you have to look at the scenario and see if the person can work again, or what, you know, the, a lot of these concussions have, you know, lifetime issues. How do you approach that type of case when you're talking about a loss of a bodily function?
That's why it's really important to get involved early to create that baseline right after the injury. Because the sooner that you create that baseline right after the injury, you can demonstrate from the time the injury occurred up until you actually go to a trial where you see the progression, whether either it was a positive progression where you're seeing these gains that Tom was talking about, or you're seeing a negative progression where now all of a sudden it's even worse than it was when their injury first happened for whatever reason, because of aggravating factors.
No, but go ahead. And I say that because now you have to, you know, imagining that if this case is moving forward, There's a lot of different ways when it comes to concussions, a lot of different effects. Doc, what can the effects be, short-term and long-term? And if you will, after the doc lays that out, how do you approach that in regards to a long-term case?
Well, I'll start with short-term. We follow them at least every 4 weeks. We do serial impact tests. There's some good people out there who do neuropsych testing. Also, a lot of these people have secondary mood disturbances. They need to see, I'll just throw a name out, Dr. Landis, who I love. Dr. Landis is a really good clinical psychologist. She testifies very well. So a lot of times if I have a complicated case where somebody has got, they're fine, and then they have anxiety, depression, suicidal ideations, I'll get somebody like that involved to ride alongside and do psychotherapy. You need to support these people. They're having marital problems. They're losing money. Their kids are saying, Dad, we have less money to spend. So it spokes of the wheel again. So short term, we see them. Long term, what I do is it's kind of like a fork in the road. Sean knows me very well. He's probably has 10 charts on his desk right now where they've just been smattered. It might be chiropractic, orthopedic, family doctors at ER, which is all templated. That's another point, little teaching point. When you guys look at ER records, you'll see everything's in fine print, and you'll see bold. That's the only thing they really did. That's the only thing they examined. So when I do a deposition, I torch these people. I take the ER, I throw it out. I throw the baby and the bathwater out because it's garbage, right? But if I do a plaintiff Siamese, it's a case I never even saw, I've got to develop a life care plan, and I've got to come up with real costs. So somebody comes in, I spend an hour or two with him, say Sean has it, typically a third-party case, litigation case, and myself, Al Zafiri, who you know, we dig into the records, everything's digitized, we do a very thorough exam, then we decide what is their current situation, what's their function, do they have a serious impairment of bodily function? You need that in New Jersey, and if you have limited tort, which many more people are getting, you need to overcome that threshold. Then you need to do future costs. You need to itemize that out. You've got to write a life care plan. And then once you have that document, you can lay it on the lap of a Tom Wing or a Sean Fulmer, and then they have something. And if let's say it's a they say it's a $5,000 case. They're wearing a helmet. There is no external evidence. Well, the brain is encased in fluid. Monroe-Kelly doctrine. This is physics. Coup counter coup. The only French I know other than Bordeaux. So the fact of the matter is coup counter coup. So you could go in front of a jury and they see somebody but the brain has been disrupted. We got to talk about Petrus ridges, temporal lobe injuries, and so and so. So the whole point is you've got to have a doctor who's able to digest this, to get a massive record, to willing to spend an hour with the patient, as opposed to the IME doctor who schedules four of these in an hour. So yes, so we have an advantage. When you practice better medicine, we have a natural advantage over these people. They're just practicing volume. They're practicing Walmart medicine.
So having said that, and by the way, Doc, I'll bring up, it may sound funny, but it really isn't. When I was in high school, I played football, and I played a little flag ball after high school. I remember, and I'll never forget it, I learned one thing about concussions. They don't necessarily have to be the kind where you get crushed, where somebody come, you put your head down. We're in a game, and I remember cutting back, and I got hit on the side of the helmet. It was just like a ricochet, okay? Somebody hit me. I blanked for a minute, so I knew something happened. Now, of course, I didn't come out of the game, but I remember, this is not a joke, I went into the huddle, and I said to the quarterback, do not give me the ball. I don't really know where I'm at, right? Eventually, that fog lifted, okay? And then, this was funny, but I'm playing flag ball one day, okay? I didn't want to play in this game, but my buddies called me. So I get there, and it's a real team we're playing. They jump out of a van, and they got uniforms on. It's a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, and I was like, what am I doing here, right? So it's the last play of the half, and I'm playing defense. I'm playing cornerback, and the quarterback steps back and throws the guy the ball in front of me. He steps back like a screen pass. So I immediately go to get him, and the entire offensive line, all three of them, because it's flag ball, run me over. I went down and hit my head. I remember, and I didn't hardly know anybody on my team. So I'm on one knee, and I'm looking to the left, and I'm in the fog, so I know I just had a concussion. Of course, I'm waiting for all my buddies, my teammates to say, are you okay? And I look up, they're 100 yards away drinking beer, right? But my point is, on occasion, and I knew I had a concussion. A funny thing after that was I had the best game of the year in the second half, but I barely remembered. But the truth is, sometimes, and this is kind of the point I'm making, Doc, and Sean, because in your world, Tom, you're getting workers' comp, you're you know, replacing wages, okay? But long term, when it comes to damages, right now I'll be on air sometimes, and I have short-term memory loss, okay? And I wonder sometimes, because I know those were two concussions. I know. I wonder if the impacts of those concussions, okay, that were exact, can last a lifetime, Doc.
They can, unfortunately. And you played running back in an era where you, the way you practiced and played it, luckily I've been in this room and that room a million times. So I'll tell you, it's something that's not noticeable to any of your guests or to the audience, but you know it yourself. You know how your brain processes. So if you feel that little delay, you might be experiencing a minor sequela of that.
Well, having said that, Sean, how do you value those sometimes lifetime issues? Like, you know, you have to put a value on this person. And in a sense, sometimes I'll tell you how I deal with it. I don't go to break because I'm like, you know what? If I go to break, I'm going to lose my train of thought. So how do you
so
deal with
it? You know, you do that. So you have your phone. You make notes continuously.
Yeah.
I watch you. I know what you do.
Sure.
When you're preparing for a show, you make great notes. During the show, you make notes. That's good for anybody, brain problem or not. You're so organized that you could overcome any of those lapses based on what you have, your tablet that you have in front of you.
And that is my plan. But when you're dealing with sometimes people who have had absolutely catastrophic situations going on, how do you value that based upon the long-term effect for the rest of their life? Headaches, memory loss, the ability, like Doc said, depression.
So it's really hard to quantify that pain and suffering type damage. So you do your best to quantify the damage you can. So that means, you know, when there's a wage loss, you know, Tom may deal with a wage loss for 5 to 10 years, whereas I'm dealing with it for the person's rest of their employment life. So that could be 20 years, could be 25 years. I'm not sure how old Dave was when he got injured, but that could have been an extra 35 years potentially of income that he would not have earned going forward because he cannot work that type of job anymore because of the exposure of can't be on the site anymore because of another concussion, other risks that he involved, performing the job duties, things like that. Also, like the doctor explained, when he writes a report, he'll outline all the treatment that is necessary going forward. So that's why it's important from the beginning to have that client talk to you about the injury because you're already creating a baseline type treatment that at a minimum that client may need for the rest of their lives.
Are there third party? You look at the case in with the Eagles. They estimate a minimum of one out of three individuals that played football in the 70s, especially at the vet, okay, where more injuries happen. Is there a statute of limitations on something like that?
So for every third-party claim, you have 2 years to file a lawsuit from the date that you learn of or that you know the injury occurred. So sometimes there's a discovery rule where you can kind of delay the process. And like in Tom's explanation where 30 to 90 days, maybe you get that extra time because you didn't learn of it, you didn't know about it. But most of the time, it's 2 years from the date of the actual injury occurring.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. I am good now, so I'm confident we're good.
I knew we were going to take the break on time as soon as you said that. I'm like, it's coming.
So listen, we are going to have more from the McManaman & Wing Show and Tom's guests, Sean Fulmer and Dr. Bruce Grossinger, in just a minute.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, in cybersecurity, when natural disasters happen, we are there in space. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve. Go to AFReserve.com for more information.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome back to the McManaman Wing Show here on WWDB Talk 860. Shout out to Tom Wing, our host. And, of course, our guest, Sean Fulmer, Chad Steinberg and Klayman. And, of course, Dr. Bruce Grossinger Neuropain. So we're talking, you know, the injuries and the medical. We'll talk about you know, different types of treatment. You know, doc, sometimes we say epidurals are sometimes needed in your world. Sometimes the invasive, minimally invasive opportunities to treat somebody far exceed the outcomes and, of course, the recovery of major surgery. If you would talk about that.
Yeah, just briefly, we deal most with neck and back problems there. We deal with the discs and the nerves, the midline structures, radiculopathy, herniated disc. We'd go laterally to the facets, medial branches. With the back, we really have three structures we focus on: the disc and nerve, the SI joints, and the facets. So our office is fully equipped, myself and Dr. Frank Avila, who works with me. We basically can do everything on, we have two operating rooms. We do everything under fluoro or ultrasound, epidurals, facets. We do radio frequency. People have RSD. We do sympathetic blocks. They have occipital nerves, concussions. We basically do everything without the need for opioids. So we prescribe generic, affordable medicines that people are able to get. And we've avoided opioids for like the last 20 years. So if anybody's listening, and certainly these gentlemen know what I do, we have a full way of treating them. They're doing physical therapy. They're doing chiropractic care. They're getting their injections. They're getting updated imaging. We're following along. And the EMG helps guide us. Have a herniated disc at C6-7, C7 nerve root. I put my needle under fluoro at C6-7. I infuse. I don't even use cortisone. I use dexamethasone and normal saline. So much better, much more natural stuff.
And let's talk about, you know, obviously for the recovery there, Doc, that, you know, that if not having to cut them.
Yeah, I'd say in our hands, 80 to 90% of people with herniated discs avoid surgery. In other people's hands, up to 25, 30% of people end up going to surgeons. So I'd like not to open the door unless I have to. And because of that, we're able to really get things under control. Another aspect is we're able to do regenerative medicine. So for the low back, have famous linebacker who I actually do a show with. I think we all know. I won't mention his name, but he plays golf every day. He's a big guy. Played with Buddy Ryan. He had his back looked like chopped liver. So basically with him, I did platelet-rich plasma. I infused his own concentrated bone marrow, which is stem cells, about 8 months ago, and he's perfect. So the nice thing is, when it comes to joint injuries, shoulders, elbows, knees, people fail those surgeries. They don't want surgeries. A lot of people with failed shoulders. Workers' comp actually pays for that now, and there's a CPT code even for motor vehicles. So platelet-rich plasma involves condensing the platelets, 2 million platelets per deciliter. Platelets, plasma, growth factors, we inject it. They ice it for 2 days. They don't miss a beat. So I guess we have a very comprehensive pain center.
So having said that, guys, I'd like to bring into the picture the contention fee agreement, okay, which I talk about all the time because people are listening to this going, how am I going to afford Tom Wing and Sean Fulmer? And certainly, what happens? What is it? Okay, and let's talk about how much people are going to have to pay for your services because that's got to be the first question.
Sure. So consults with a workers' comp lawyer are always free, and you pay nothing until you win. So a workers' comp lawyer gets paid in two ways. One, if they keep your benefits on when the insurance company is trying to turn them off, or if they get you benefits. In Pennsylvania, it's typically 20% of whatever they get for you. But if they don't recover for you, you pay nothing.
So and Sean, in your world, okay, and it's a situation where you could be investing thousands of dollars on experts, okay, talk about the out of pocket cost when it comes to somebody coming and to your office.
So same thing, it's a free consultation. We just decided to move forward together. We'll invest in you as you're investing in us. So we'll invest in the experts. We'll get the records. We'll get the narrative reports, the actual reports that we need to go to trial and actually present your case. Same idea. If we are not successful, we don't get paid, but we get paid a percentage as well. Typically, it can be a third, 35%, or 40%, but those are the percentages that are typically in a third-party case.
Talk about the importance of having the resources, okay, and being able to – that all firms are not the same. Particularly personal injury firms, in regards to sometimes you may need a medical expert, somebody, and that could cost you money, no way could I afford that as a regular Joe. Like, and you know, I'm injured. How does that work?
So as a third-party personal injury attorney, you need to have relationships with medical professionals that can that can provide the necessary reports in order to go to court and be successful. You also can go to treating doctors who may not do this as a regular part of their practice, but still present it in a way that allows that treating doctor to also give you a report. Let's say they did a surgery or some other type of specialty that's not typical in a car accident or trip and fall type case. That's why it's important to have someone that's knowledgeable. You're right.
Credible also, though, right?
Yes, because realistically, the personal injury attorney, if they actually do trial work, they're going to know, okay, these are the skeletons in this doctor's closet, or this is the credential questions that this doctor will face. And it's important to know that because your report from that expert can get undermined, and then that undermines the value of your case.
Well, you're also going in front of a defense that are going to have their own experts, right?
Yeah, every defense will have their own experts. Most of the time, you can, as a personal injury attorney who's representing a plaintiff, the person who's injured, you can write their own report for them. You know what they're going to say. You know how they're going to present the case. That's why it's important to be prepared to be on the offensive and have those reports ready.
Something that Sean pointed out that was sort of midway through his answer is really important, and it's the difference between a settlement lawyer and a trial lawyer. If you don't take cases to decision, you don't have that experience. If you're the guy that's waiting until the day before the statute of limitations to file that writ of summons, and then you just settle the case as quickly as you can, you're not getting top dollar. If you're not taking the depositions, you're not putting cases in front of a jury, or in my case, in front of a judge, you're not going to get what you're supposed to get out of your case.
You just said something. You said something that I have been wondering for 20 years. Being in the club business, I owned a nightclub for 15 years. I always wondered why I got served 2 years later. Okay?
Well, there's two reasons. One, it's a complicated case and a ton of investigation. You want to make sure you have all the parties. But if it's a simple rear-end motor vehicle accident and you get served with a writ of summons 2 days before the statute, it's because you got sued by a settlement lawyer.
Okay. So mine would be a slip and fall that by that time, we may not have a damn employee. It's not on our records and we worked our butts off. And I once had the guy who served me at my house, okay, and they were kind of minimal cases, but I'd say, can you do me a favor? Tell me why 2 years later you're, you know, and you're on an assembly occupancy facility, and we did for a decade and a half. You know, and we kept, we didn't even have any stairs in the damn building, but that didn't mean it wasn't a fight between two people, or it could be a lot of different things, but the guy explained that statute of limitation, or, you know, but he didn't get into what you said. And I always wondered that question. But Sean, my question for you was, when you talk about the resources the firm has, I asked that question because people are out there who get hurt, who don't, they don't necessarily know the question to ask. Okay. You can't have a dabbler. Okay, an attorney that's maybe does general practice could be awesome at a lot of neighborhood stuff, but PI and workers' compensation are not dabbler type areas. I was on a show recently. This was unbelievable. And the attorney was a personal injury attorney, and she said that a client came into her office that earlier that day and asked her if she was going to have to pay for the expert again. The client. She left that attorney, and the point is, she read, obviously the attorney sitting in front of me, because we have the best of the best on the show, knew that the girl had gone to the wrong attorney in the wrong firm. But these experts sometimes cost a lot of money. And one of the things that regular people like me may not know is if the firm has the resources to be able to properly represent the case in the face of a conglomerate insurance company that may have limitless resources. How important is that one factor that you don't have to sit there and go, well, we got to pay the rent this month. I don't think I can afford the top guy. So we'll settle, or I'm going to go with somebody who just knew in the business. Talk about that.
So when you're a client walking into a lawyer's office for the first time, or if you're doing a Zoom call, it's very important for you to appreciate the demeanor of the attorney, right? If the attorney at the outset isn't really being completely transparent about the process and explaining what's going on. One, they may not really fully understand the process themselves, or two, they may not know how this case is going to go moving into the future. And that's why it's important to talk to someone. And again, when you're meeting that person in person, it's different than Zoom. You get to see the whole body demeanor.
Oh, it's interesting. It's an interesting point.
You're not seeing the legs shaking under the table. You're not seeing the hands under the table. Like, you're being able to actually see that person respond to you in a confident manner. And that's going to tell you a lot about who you're signing up with and who you're going to be on this journey. Because on the third party action, it isn't a case that more often than not it's over in 30 days. This is a year, 2 years, multi-year investment. And that's why I said earlier, you know, we pay for the experts because we're investing in the client. We believe in your case.
Well, a client wouldn't even know because they're the attorney's God. So in other words, the client, that's why I asked this question, you know, because listeners can, that they should know who's got the resources to be able to not compromise the client. They wouldn't know. And this may be...
You have to read your fee agreement. So it's in the fee agreement. It will tell you whether or not how costs are to be paid and how the lawyer is paid. And you should read your fee agreement really carefully, because I think every lawyer, at least certainly Sean and I certainly have, horror stories of people we have given second opinions to.
Oh, boy.
Where... They did go to the lawyer that they had to foot the bill for the expert, and they didn't bring in the best. Because if you're bringing in a board certified physician, that's multiples of thousands of dollars for an hour of their time to testify. If you want to have them block off an entire day out of their busy schedule to go down to the Court of Common Pleas and testify in front of a jury, it's many times more than that.
Okay. With both the firms, the culture of the firms, talk about them if you would, you know, so people understand. Obviously, a lot of people, the main issues they have with their attorneys are communications, the importance of the first meeting and setting up expectations, the ebbs and flows of a case, because, you know, it's likely that the insurance company, you know, from what we always hear, they're in the business of receiving premiums, not paying out, you know, settlements. So, likely, you know, but and certainly setting that client up in a positive way, educating them and saying, you know, for the ebbs and flows of a case that could take a couple years, and not having them be their own worst enemy in a very hostile situation, which is why you need an attorney, because, you know, I'm sure they can see somebody, you know, a lost lamb up, you know, 10 miles away. Talk about what clients can expect from both of your practices regards to communications and that first conversation that educates the client on what the somehow stereotypically expect regarding the ebbs and flows if they don't get better in a week.
I love it when I speak to the client for the first time, because I actually control the roadmap that the client's going to understand. It's not, you know, they're not going to get it from a paralegal, a staff member. They're going to hear it from the attorney that hopefully is going to be that person throughout the whole process. The other thing too is transparency is key, right? So being available, text message, email, phone calls, whenever, but also explaining, hey, look, we're incurring this cost. You're not responsible for it, but I'm letting you know eventually this cost will come out of whatever we recover. Again, that
but if you didn't recover, it wouldn't come out of them, right?
If we don't recover, correct. Right. But that transparency builds a relationship with the client where that client believes and trusts that you're doing the best for them and their case.
Yeah, you're being completely straight up, which always makes me a little nervous because somebody never met an attorney before they might walk in, and I mean, and you're dealing with insurance companies. In your world, Tom, sure. Workers' compensation carriers can be unforgiving and
oh yeah, they give our people a lot of bad information. So sometimes in a personal injury claim, they have had very little or no contact with the insurance company. Although sometimes they give that recorded statement, which we don't have time to talk about today.
Yeah, that's
okay. Total nightmare. But in workers' comp, that insurance adjuster who's handling that claim has likely given them a lot of bad legal advice, whether it's, no, you can't go see the neurologist, or no, you can't go to the emergency room, or you have to go back to work. We don't care that you have restrictions. I've heard it all. So undoing the bad advice that they've already gotten is a lot of what happens in that initial consultation.
Got it.
And then we also give the clients the lawyer's cell phone number who will be handling their case. We don't use that sort of assembly line team approach. One lawyer is assigned to handle a case from the very beginning until that file is closed in our office. And so they have a direct line of communication to that person. We do the same thing with paralegals. They'll have one paralegal assigned from their claim from the moment it walks in the door until the moment the file is closed. And so they build a relationship with that person.
I want to ask Dr. Grossinger. Doc, we talk about the contingent fee agreement when it comes to the attorneys, which gives, it's the equalizer, it gives individuals the opportunity to get a world-class, representation, okay, without coming out of pocket, okay? In your world, now you got somebody who the regular insurance may, it's a work injury, so they, it's not covering it. Are they paying out of pocket when they walk in your, if they get a work injury or an accident?
I think we differ, especially in our Delaware practice. It's kind of crazy. The orthopedics of Delaware, you need to basically, you have to have an open workers' comp claim. You need a really good backup insurance. Then you can put up your firstborn as collateral. We're the exact opposite. So in other words, I'll see a workers' comp case at any stage. I presume they're going to get denied. And they're entitled, the client is entitled to get paid on the workers' comp fee schedule. So that we honor that. It's the law of the land. So a lot of doctors will not, and people like Tom Wing are going to have problems banging their head when they're dealing with these orthopedic practices because the claim's getting denied. It's a catch-22. They have Medicaid insurance, which they don't take. We're the exact opposite. So we know that we get involved. We treat the people well. If you treat enough people well, at the end of the line, you're going to be able to keep your lights on. So when anybody comes to Grossinger Noro Paid, whether it's an exhausted motor vehicle case for somebody we know like Mr. Fulmer, who protects our bill, or whether it's a denied claim, they're all denied. We know if we do our job, they're going to depose us at some point. Their lit costs are going to be paid for. That is the attorney and the clients, and we're going to prevail.
Doc, so which means, in other words, but also in your case, it's got to be paramount, and I'm assuming that you know that the attorneys and the legal representation is top-notch.
Correct. There's certain things we call schutz. That's a little Yiddish. So there's a few schutzy, I'd say maybe 2% of the lawyers we know who will...
If somebody's dabbling, maybe...
They'll either be a settlement lawyer who is always going to call you and say, wringing their hands and say, there's only 5,000 or whatever. But they'll let you treat them for 3 years. But we know those people. The vast majority of competent attorneys, we trust them. We know them. I've been doing this for 34 years. So we're able to get rid of the outliers.
Like the attorney that was that obviously was dabbling and had no business being in personal injury or workers' compensation. Because I've had great PI attorneys say to me, I dabbled in work comp briefly and got the hell out of it. Okay, because it's such a specialty, and PI is also obviously that woman was an example. But Doc, what do you do in a situation? We only got a couple minutes left, but. When you, and I'm sure it has happened, where you walk in and you know that the client is dealing not with somebody from, one of the great firms, okay, and they're dealing with a dabbler, maybe a general practice attorney, and they got a problem.
They need me more than ever. So that person needs great medical care. They need great medical care. So I'm not going to not see somebody because I don't think their attorney is the greatest. If I do my job, I document things. We don't use templates at all. We talked about templates. I dictate everything into a old-fashioned Olympus dictaphone. It goes to a live patient. I had a carload of 6 people in an accident. I spent 2 hours with them. There was not one of those reports that's going to look even vaguely identical. What we do is very different. It's old school. So the fact of the matter is, if they got a bad attorney, it's not my job. In other words, I'm not invested in the case. My job is to treat them well. If they selected the attorney, that's their choice. I just control what I can control.
One of the interesting things that he just mentioned I think is very important is when claims are not initially denied, they're stringing the injured worker along, and then it's denied.
Yeah.
When you're working with a doctor who handles workers' comp patients all the time but it's not tied to the insurance company, they're not going to rush to send your client immediately to collections, which is what we see happen all the in these giant orthopedics practices.
And I would never send either of your clients to collections because that's not good. That's terrible.
That's a great way to cut your own throat.
We don't do that.
How do you guys deal with, and we got 2 minutes left, so just how do you deal with a situation where somebody like that attorney we talked about went through somebody who was not an expert in work comp. Now they're tied up in a pretzel when they walk in. How do you fix that mess?
Sometimes it's beyond fixing. Sometimes you can pick up the phone and call that lawyer. I mean, sometimes they're too deep into the case. You can't jump into it, but you can try to help that other lawyer undo it. And sometimes you have to intervene and fix it. It really depends on the case.
So let's do this. Contact information around the horn, Dr. Bruce Grossinger.
Grossinger Neuro Pain, 610-521-6063.
Sean Fulmer,
Schatz, Steinberg & Clayman, 215-845-0250.
Tom Wing, our host.
Sure, Tom Wing, McMenamin & Wing. Follow me on TikTok at THWESQ.
Fantastic. You think we're going to make the cut? It Matt, are we going to make the cut? Do you get my good side? Oh, he's going to be editing this all night. Thank God you have, what do they call those, screen enhancers or whatever?
The filters.
The filters.
Yeah. We don't ever use a filter for you. The rest of us need it.
I've been carrying this damn TikTok for months. Listen, this has been a fantastic broadcast. Shout out to Matt. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the McMenamin & Wing Show. I want to thank Tyler, our producer. Of course, Dr. Bruce Grossinger, Sean Fulmer, fantastic attorney, and of course, our host, Tom Wing. Shout out to Roger McMenamin, who is in the Adirondacks right now skiing. Take a shot. And of course, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. Been a fantastic broadcast. We've gotten everybody's contact information. Awesome. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the McMenamin & Wing Show. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Doherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.